This is a mystery right out of the American heartland. Two parents burned to ashes. Two teenage girls just disappeared. There is one clue left behind, just one, and it took a mother's fierce determination to bring it into the light. This is where our story begins. Welcome to True Crime Recaps. I'm Chris. Are you ready to piece it all together? Let's recap. December 30th, 1999 is a Thursday Laureen Bible will never forget. She was at work when an Oklahoma deputy showed up looking for her. He pulled her aside and asked, "Do you know Ashley Freeman?" Laureen's heart sank. Ashley was more than just her daughter Laura's best friend. They were like sisters. The girls were inseparable, like two peas in a pod, growing up just a stone's throw away from each other. From playground days to endless phone chats, they were practically joined at the hip, finishing each other's sentences like some kind of mind-reading act. They shared everything, every little adventure, and, sadly, their final moments. The night before, Laura slept over at Ashley's for her friend's sweet 16 birthday party. Laura's dad remembers it like yesterday. She asked, "Daddy, is it all right if I spend the night with Ashley?" He didn't mind as long as Laura was home by noon. But by noon the next day, Ashley's mobile home was nothing but a smoldering ruin. A passerby called it in around 5:30 a.m. Laureen arrived to find her daughter's car parked in the driveway. The police had set up a 1,000-yard perimeter. Nobody was allowed beyond the yellow tape. That's when Laureen saw the coroner walking away from the trailer. They were friendly, so Laureen called her over and asked for details. The coroner said they'd found a woman's body. It was burned beyond recognition, but there was a ring on the left hand. Laureen knew it was Kathy Freeman, but where was Danny? More importantly, where were Laura and Ashley? In Welch, Oklahoma, a cozy little town where just about everyone knows your name, the news hit like a thunderbolt. This place, a quiet spot in Craig County with its 500 souls, mostly farmers, isn't the scene you'd pick for a crime thriller. But as the calendar flipped to the 2000s, Welch found itself in a storyline it never asked for. Meth had crept into the town, bringing a shadow of violence in its wake. Suddenly, the local dealers were the new boogeymen, the kind you'd cross the street to avoid. So the big question hanging over everyone's head, did Kathy and Danny Freeman cross the wrong line? And were Ashley, their daughter, and her inseparable sidekick, Laura Bible, just in the wrong place at the wrong time? It's the kind of twist that makes you think twice about quiet little towns on the map. Right off the bat, the rumor mill was working overtime. You name it, every kind of wild guess was flying around. Word on the street was Danny Freeman wasn't exactly father of the year. The guy had a history, including a nasty run-in with black powder that left him needing a bit of a hardware upgrade. We're talking metal plates in his skull. Some people said that accident flipped his fuse a bit too easily. So the first whisper was straight out of a crime drama. Danny snaps, offs his wife, and hits the road with Ashley and Laura. Someone even swore they saw a blue car making a speedy getaway after the fire, but that hot tip soon went cold as ice. Turns out, Danny was still in the trailer, but he was as gone gets. The cops, thinking they'd wrapped up at the scene, handed it back to the families. But here's the kicker. While sifting through the ashes, Laureen stumbled on something the police missed by a country mile. Danny, or what was left of him, was right there in the ruins. Danny and Kathy died from shotgun blasts to the head. Whoever did it set fire to destroy the evidence. That's when the blame shifted away from Danny and on to Ashley. The new theory was that Ashley turned on her folks, lit up the place, and took off with Laura in tow. But here's the head scratcher. Laura's purse, complete with her ID and $200, was left behind. Laureen wasn't buying it. No way her daughter ditches her bag, even in a mad dash after such a nightmare. No, someone else did this, and they took the girls. Then whispers start swirling about an inside job, maybe even someone from the Craig County Sheriff's own roster, and the theory started with Danny himself. According to Danny's own stepbrother, he once said, "If anything ever happens to me, look at the sheriff's department." That beef started with Ashley's older brother, Shane. He was well known among local law enforcement. Shane had been on his own little crime spree from late 1998 into early 1999. He was breaking into houses and terrorizing the town. About a year before this, in January of 1999, the sheriff's department found Shane on the side of the road after a truck he'd stolen had broken down. That's when Shane pulled a gun and the police shot him dead. He was only 17 years old. The shooting was ruled justifiable, but Danny never forgave the sheriff's department for killing his son. They went back and forth for months. The bad blood was the worst kept secret in town. The sheriff's involvement was a clear conflict of interest, so they willingly turned the case over to the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, or the OSBI. The officers involved in Shane's shooting also took a polygraph test. They were cleared of any involvement with the Freeman murders and the missing girls. It was around this time that drug rumors started swirling. Everyone knew Danny grew marijuana on his property. According to one local journalist, Danny grew the best pot in northeast Oklahoma. But weed wasn't the issue here. Welch was dealing with a more dangerous kind of drug. Methamphetamine was a growing issue in Craig County. Danny Freeman was known as a small-time peddler. Even today, meth overdoses kill more Oklahomans than any other drug. In 2021, 43 people died from oxycodone, and fentanyl killed another 299. Meanwhile, meth accounted for over 600 of the near 1,000 overdose deaths. But Danny and Kathy Freeman were killed by shotgun blasts to the head. Was this a drug deal gone wrong? Did they owe somebody money? OSBI agents dismissed this theory at first. If this was a deal gone wrong, why would the killers take the girls? If they were witnesses, why not get rid of them before setting the fire? The only piece of tangible evidence was an out-of-place car insurance card found about 50 feet from the smoldering wreck of the mobile home. It was found by a private investigator who began working on the case when the fire went out. It belonged to a woman identified in police records as E.B., and she owned a blue car, the same color witnesses saw speeding away from the scene. At first, police brushed it off. They didn't think it was a solid clue, but eventually the law interviewed E.B., except she had no idea how her insurance card wound up at the scene. But she wasn't the only person who drove her car. Her boyfriend, Phil Welch, used it all the time. Phil was a drug dealer and small-time meth chef. He rolled with two other men, Ronnie Busick and David Pennington. They were a meth-dealing trio out of Pitcher, Oklahoma, a small town on the Kansas line about 30 minutes northeast of Welch. Are you ready for a fun fact? Pitcher, Oklahoma is known as America's most toxic town. These days, it's a ghost town abandoned after decades of mining left it unlivable. But back in 99, when Phil was breaking bad, the town was still a good 10 years away from ghost status. Lorene Bible began connecting the dots between Danny Freeman, Phil Welch, and a drug cartel from Miami, Oklahoma. She even met with a ranking cartel member for any new information. Lorene was fearless. When the cartel member approached her, he said, "How do you know I'm not packing?" Lorene simply replied, "How do you know I'm not packing?" Unfortunately, the meeting was another dead end. The cartel member had a personal code. He didn't kill women and he didn't kill children. Lorene could tell he was telling the truth. Months became years. Many accused the Craig County Sheriff's Department of not trying, given the bad blood between them and Danny Freeman. They interviewed people connected to Phil, David, and Ronnie, but no arrests were ever made. In 2004, police in Alabama arrested a man named Jeremy Jones. He was sentenced to death for the rape and murder of a woman in Mobile. While on death row, Jeremy began confessing to all kinds of crimes. He claimed he killed Kathy and Danny Freeman as a favor to a friend. Then he drove the girls into Kansas, shot them, and dumped their bodies in an abandoned mine. However, searches of the mine turned up empty. Jeremy recanted his confession, claiming he only said it to get more privileges in jail. He'd already been sentenced to death. What more did he have to lose? 9 more years would pass before anybody put a dent in the case. By then, Ashley Freeman had been declared legally dead. In 2013, a new batch of detectives began combing through the case file. They learned the OSBI had interviewed Phil Welch back in 2003. According to Phil, he knew the Freeman family. He even moved about 3/4 of a mile away from them before the murder. He admitted to driving his girlfriend's car, but didn't know how her card wound up at the scene. Police interviewed other women who knew or dated Phil, David, and Ronnie. Their names kept appearing, yet nobody followed up on the leads. In one of those interviews from January 9, 2001, a former girlfriend implicated Phil as a cooker of meth. She said he, David, and Ronnie implied that the people murdered in Welch, Oklahoma, owed them money and had been murdered for that debt. She overheard the trio talking about how they took the teenage girls and killed them. The girlfriend also told police about a leather briefcase filled with Polaroid pictures of Laura and Ashley. They were bound and gagged and looked like they hadn't eaten in days. In some photographs, she could see Phil on the bed next to them. When she confronted Phil about the pictures, he said, "Don't you ever tell anybody or you will end up in a pit in Pitcher like those two girls." In 2016, a new regime in Craig County began tracking down these old witnesses. They found a woman who used to live with David Pennington. She said David, Phil, and Ronnie loved to brag about killing the girls. As she put it, the trio decided to take the girls and have fun with them. All of the interviews tell the same story. David, Phil, and Ronnie abducted Ashley and Laura and held them captive in a trailer. The trio raped and tortured both girls before killing them and disposing of their bodies. The girlfriend didn't know where the bodies were, only that they were at the bottom of a pit. In 2017, when the new sheriff took office, he discovered a crate full of files left over from the previous administration. It had been sitting untouched for years. Inside were tons of documents about the Freeman case. The same names kept coming up: Phil Welch, David Pennington, and Ronnie Busick. Our new investigative regime had its prime suspects. Unfortunately, most of them were dead. Phil died in 2007. David went in 2015. The only person still alive was Ronnie. Luckily for them, he was sitting in a Kansas jail having been arrested on an unrelated charge. They conducted three interviews with Ronnie, each more revealing than the last. Ronnie played dumb at first. He said he recognized Phil's name, but hung out with David Pennington more often. When shown a picture of Ashley and Laura, Ronnie said he knew the story, but not the girls. The investigators began asking more pointed questions. Ronnie could tell they knew something. Instead of recognizing Phil's name, Ronnie said they used to be pretty tight back in the day. He also said he wouldn't put anything past Phil. Ronnie was supposed to leave the Kansas jail on April 23rd, 2018. If he did, there's no telling where he may have gone. He knew the police were on to him. He could flee south. He could flee north. He could kill himself instead of facing the music. Police had to keep Ronnie in place, so they filed an extremely detailed arrest warrant. They charged him with 4 counts of murder and 2 counts of kidnapping. Ronnie knew it was over. He gave the police his version of events. He, David, and Phil went to the Freeman house to collect a drug debt. Tensions escalated, and the trio shot and killed Danny and Kathy. During the shooting, Laura and Ashley ran out the back door and into a field. Ronnie saw them run, but couldn't tell where they were. That's when either Phil or David set the trailer on fire. The girls poked their heads up to look, which allowed the trio to locate and chase them down. They brought the girls back to Phil's house in Pitcher. They were bound, drugged, tortured, and violated for 2 weeks. Then they were disposed of. Ronnie never implicated himself in the disposal phase directly. Ronnie was offered immunity if he led police to Ashley and Laura's bodies. He basically led them on a wild goose chase. It's unclear if he knows where the bodies are. Laureen Bible thought she could coax it out of him. April 26, 2018 was another Thursday Laureen will never forget. It was the day she sat face to face with the man accused of killing her daughter. It was a day she'd been waiting for since 1999. She asked, "Do you have kids?" Ronnie said he and his wife had lost their baby daughter to SIDS many years ago. Laureen asked where the baby was buried. Ronnie said a cemetery. He got the point, but he didn't give her an answer. He stuck to his guns. He didn't know where Laura and Ashley were hidden. Ronnie pleaded guilty to being an accessory to first-degree murder in July 2020. He was sentenced to 10 years in prison plus 5 years probation. But Ronnie was a model prisoner. He earned enough credits for cleanliness and good behavior to secure an early release. 2.5 years later, on May 19th, 2023, he walked out a free man. The 71-year-old got on a bus to God knows where. Laureen and a group of protesters watched him go. She vowed to watch him like a hawk. He wouldn't take a breath Laureen didn't know about. She said, "I want him to know that I'm not going anywhere. He gets to go on. My child does not." The one day in this story that you should remember is January 3rd, 2001, 4 days after the fire and murder. That was the day Phil Welch's name surfaced for the first time. Had the police dug deeper into that lead, Ashley and Laura may have been found alive. As of 2024, the search continues for their bodies.
And that's your recap.
Thanks for hanging out with us today.
If you like getting all the crime in half the time, go ahead and tap that subscribe button so you never miss a story.
But don't go away. Catch up on more recaps right here, right now.
Until next time, take care.